I know kung fu.
Show me.
Hector!
Tell me. Do you bleed? You should have gone for the head.
That's what she said.
You're a wizard, Harry.
I'm Pickle Rick!
I am the father.
You, David.
All right, Knights, we have a special treat for you. Some of you say all we know are two genres. And what are those two genres we know, Jay?
Marvel and Star Wars, is that it?
Marvel and Star Wars. But guess what? Someone called us out on it, and we challenged him to come on and teach us about horror movies and sci-fi. Right, Jay?
That's right.
All right, a friend I've known for many, many years. The only other guy I know that nerded out on Mystery Science Theater 3000. We'll give you a master later, but Tyler Hardman, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, guys. And I didn't mean it personally, right? I just felt like a lot of the content as a nerd myself, and I'll say this, I've hidden it. Most people don't know how nerdy I am. And I love you guys' content, but I want to see it expanded. And I called, like, I don't know who operates your Deadlight Nerds pod or Instagram account, but somebody responded, and now here I am under the gun. But it's great to be here. I'm excited. Thank you guys for bringing me on.
we tried to do horror once, and this is actually a funny little side note. Jay's wife, well, like a little bit, she's the horror out of both of us, right? Because you and me are cowards, right, Jay?
Did you just call my wife a whore?
Horror movie enthusiast.
Horror movie aficionado, right?
Thank you, Tyler.
Well, Jay, you don't scare me.
Yes, no, no, my wife definitely takes into the horror vein of enjoying stuff. We have a giant It poster above our oven that greets people the minute they walk in.
The minute you walk in.
It's the first thing people see, honestly, when they walk into our apartment. Greeted by Pennywise. Boy,
as long as it's not the last thing they see. Right,
right, yeah, exactly. It's so true. That's but probably the last thing I'll see.
This guy that I met at the gym, he's like, yeah, I checked out your podcast. You guys have an It thing. I'm so stoked about it. And in my head, I'm like, when did we ever talk about that movie? And it was like a 2-second thing that you and me talked about. And it was just like, yeah, I like it. And I'm like, I was too scared to watch it. And I haven't heard from the guy since. So
well, let me ask you on that same vein, John and Jay, Deadlight Nerds, Deadlight, is that a reference to the movie It or the books? If any of you guys recall, It is a dimensional being. He's from the prehistoric past. And when he wants to hypnotize somebody prior to eating them, he has a light that shines out of his mouth. And they refer to that in the book as the Deadlights. Is that the same reference in your name here?
No.
Okay.
Not even close, but I like it, though.
Yeah, Deadlights. They make reference to that. In fact, if you watch the 1990s It films with Tim Curry, right, running around masquerading as the clown Pennywise, they make a lot of reference to the Deadlights in that one.
They make a brief reference. So I didn't know about the Deadlights. They make a brief reference in It Chapter 2. And when we saw that in theaters, they're like, the Deadlights. My wife and I both like stared at each other because we'd been doing the podcast for a year and a half at that point.
Oh, interesting. So you guys then came up with it on your own, own little. What's the story, though? Now I'm interested.
So you can tell someone's a novice to our podcast, but I'm glad that we have one on.
Johnny just loves to tease.
That's what I do. That's what I do best. So as Ty knows, because he knows Latin, Luz, my last name means light. Mm-hmm. And Mort, Jay, is Latin, Mortimer, is death.
Oh,
so we're,
I've got it.
So, I mean, it's not Deathlight Nerds. We tried that for a second. It didn't work. We were originally going to be called what, Jay?
The Good, the Bad, and the Nerdy.
The Good, the Bad, and the Nerdy.
Then we decided that's,
yeah, that had a cooler ring to it. And then we just figured we'd do the GBN, Good, Bad, and Nerdy when we review films to keep us in line.
Deep cut.
Hey, that's great.
There is a video game called Deadlight or something to that effect. And I have no idea what happens in it. I never played it or watched anything on it. But if you Google us, one of like the third videos suggested is the trailer for the video game.
So, no kidding. What console?
I have no idea.
I think it's an indie game, so it's for everybody.
PC, yeah.
Oh, that's great, yeah. You know, it's funny we bring up It. That's one of those franchises, I feel like. has done better than the initial one that came out in the 90s. If you ever watch that one, you come away feeling a little bit dirty. just Tim Curry, he just plays a really good clown, right? But at the same time, I mean, there's a lot of weird things that they deal with in that movie. The scene at the dinner table where they're opening the fortune cookies. The initial one had a lot more. I mean, I'm pretty convinced they have an actual dead or dying bird, right, on the original one. Obviously, now you couldn't get away with that, right? But the original one, it was just a little bit grittier. But this one feels a little bit more Stephen King, if you've actually seen the newer ones. I don't know if you guys watch those kind of movies. And that's why I'm here, right, is because that's my vein.
So I did watch the first one, didn't sleep, and then my wife dragged me to the second one, and I slept a little bit easier. I thought the first one was better than the second. I think it's more intense to watch children in peril than adults in peril. That's just me. So I got a lot more into the first movie because it was the kids who were dealing with Pennywise. Whereas when it was the adults, I was like, nah, whatever. Go ahead and kill him.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. Now that you mention that, I think there is this feeling of kids being more vulnerable. And if a horror movie is able to bring them in, yeah, I guess I'll have to look into that. What kind of movies feature children, right, as the protagonist? Not too many, right? Especially in the horror genre, you don't see that very often.
Well, and to have Georgie get eaten right off the bat. Some people say that like when Stephen King first released the book, it was like he was almost breaking rules. Like it broke people a little bit. Like, what is he doing? You can't, like, kids are off limits. You can't have the clown eat a kid right in the beginning. So it kind of messed some people up, is what we'll say.
I watched it with my wife, and I can confirm that. Yeah, she got real squeamish on that part, and I think it's the way that Georgie went depicted in the latest movie. I think he's dismembered, right, and then pulled into the sewer drain. And for a lot of viewers, that was tough to see a little kid like that. I think most human beings, right? Yeah,
it didn't help they cast like the cutest little kid too, with his little voice and his little rain jacket. Getting eaten.
Yeah, I guess it would be different if it was, you know, a snot little kid. Not too many of those. Yeah, you know, it's interesting too. Because going back on my childhood, movies like that, we used to have to sneak, my brother and I, we used to have to sneak down into, you know, the living room where the cable TV was when my parents were asleep. And that's where we could really indulge on movies like the Stephen King movies. And I remember watching a movie when I was 6 years old called Fire in the Sky, and it's an alien abduction movie. It's based on a true story, and I'm using quotes for people listening because, I mean, how do you base an alien abduction on a true story, right? Especially because we obviously aren't interacting with alien beings where we can say, oh, yeah, they exist. But, yeah, it takes place in Snowflake, Arizona, and it's actually interesting because there's a connection to Utah. The character in it who's abducted is a Latter-day Saint, and the film involves like church members going out into the field looking for this guy. But there's a really disturbing scene in there where he's on board the alien spaceship, and of course they do their experiments to him. And it was on – I recently saw – I don't know if you guys are familiar with Watch Mojo. They have a YouTube channel where they preview top tens, and it was on one of their most intense scenes of a movie when the aliens are doing their experiments to this guy. But as a kid, as a six-year-old, I mean, that traumatized me. I had to stay with my brother for the next 2 years. I just couldn't get over it. I'd have reoccurring nightmares. But yeah, I guess it's interesting because we all have these movies that we grew up or that we saw as kids that imprinted on us. And maybe that's one reason I'm really into the sci-fi horror genre. That and probably Goosebumps, right? R.L. Stine. Every week you'd get a new one and you could read, and there was some element in there that involves science fiction and another element that involves horror, and then you have the kids trapped in the middle of it all.
Yeah, I'm trying to think science fiction horror. That's such an interesting combination of genres, you know what I mean? There's a lot you can dig into with that. And King, I would say, Stephen King is one of the... So I've watched a few bits of his work or read some of his synopsis of his work, and yeah, it's kind of eerie. Because you can...
Yeah, King...
go down a rabbit hole with that real fast.
Yeah, and there's two versions of Stephen King. He was in an accident. A lot of people don't know this, in the 90s. And his work after the car, he really hurt his head, and he had a lot of brain trauma. And his work after that just wasn't the same. it had a different feel to it. The early stuff was, in my opinion, the best stuff. That's where you have It. That's where you have Carrie. That's where you have The Night Flyer. The Shining. Yeah, The Stand. Oh, John, The Shining. Yeah, that's a terrific movie.
What about Pet Sematary?
Pet Sematary, I don't know when that one. I think that obviously the movies came out in the 80s, so I have to assume his books were written prior to that. And I would assume that was pre-accident Stephen King. The newer stuff, you know, he hasn't really recaptured the same edge that he had. And of course, Stephen King, the problem with him in terms of cinema is that nobody can do a Stephen King movie well. They're normally garbage. I don't know if you guys ever have watched a Stephen King adaptation, but for the most part, they're terrible. You know, they're usually really low grade actors. They don't have large budgets. And, you know, I don't know if it's like Lifetime. If they were to create a Stephen King movie, the Lifetime channel, that's how they feel these adaptations do for anybody that watches the sci-fi horror or is familiar with Stephen King's work. And of course, for me, you know, I get a kick out of watching them just for the B movie value. But yeah, there's very few Stephen King adaptations that were done well. I think Dr. Sleep, that's one that came out a few months ago, maybe earlier this year. That was decent, but it didn't really have the same dread in it. It didn't really have some of the hallmark Stephen King literary, I guess, ties of his earlier work where you genuinely get scared. I mean, Pet Sematary, there were some really scary parts in that movie.
There's one, Ankle Biters or Dust Bunnies, I don't know. There's one Stephen King where I did watch. It's from like the 80s, and it looks like a Lifetime production. And it's these like dust bunny looking creatures are coming after these people who flew an airplane through a space-time gap. And I don't know which one it is, but it was really poorly done. I didn't get through all of it.
No, you've got me curious. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that one is. You're not talking about I didn't know that Stephen – he's had some weird ones, right? Maximum Overdrive that had Emilio Estevez in it. A comet passes Earth and all technology comes alive. So the refrigerators are like chasing people down the street and like a vending machine starts shooting soda cans at little kids on the soccer field and kills some of them, right? How quick it shoots these out. But I'm not familiar with anything involving – it sounds like a Stephen King movie. It really does. If it's got weird things in there that don't add up, you're in the right area. That's for sure.
It's called Jay, you're remembering Are You Afraid of the Dark? It was a Nickelodeon show. They would tell movies in front of a campfire. So you're remembering something different.
No. It's called The Langoliers. That's the name of it.
Langoliers. Okay. Yes, I am familiar with that. And now you're right. So the premise of that movie is a bunch of people are on a 747 commercial airliner, and mid-flight, they lose contact with everything, right? And nobody is able to get a hold of air traffic control, and they end up landing the plane, and they realize that everybody's gone, right? They don't know any – the airports are vacant. There's no cars, no people, and these, 25 people are trying to piece together what happened. You're right. Yeah, Langoliers. You know, it's funny you bring that up because you can watch those for free on YouTube. That's a really I don't know that I appreciate that movie the way somebody who read the book would because it just to me it was a little bit bizarre. But, yeah, the lint things you're talking about, They eat time, right? And they eat everything up. And there's a weird scene at the end. Again, think of 1992 pre-Jurassic Park CGI. And that's what these Langoliers look like. Really, really crappy. But it's funny that you do bring that up because as a kid, I remember watching that being terrified. And as an adult, you look at it and you go, what the heck? This is video game graphics and the acting is not compelling. Very interesting show, though. Interesting concept.
I know I kind of miss the days when movies could have scared me as a kid, you know, to the level that they did as a kid. For the most part, I can sit through most horror and be okay. There are a few exceptions. The first It movie really did get me. There was a movie called Lights Out that for some reason like terrified me. I don't know why. But other horror movies we've watched don't always do it. You know what I mean?
So Lights Out, I believe, are you referring to the one that – was initially there was a short movie on YouTube called Lights Out,
mm-hmm.
and it was maybe 3 or 4 minutes long, and they made that into a movie adaptation, really spooky movie. I actually watched that not long ago, and I really appreciated that. I think with COVID-19 and with everything related to the pandemic, people are really starting to embrace some of the darker movie genres, right? People are wanting to match what they're feeling inside with the content they're consuming. And I think we're seeing a push in film that's reflecting people's changing interests. Because COVID is really bringing out, you could argue, some of the worst in us, right? We're very skeptical of each other's motives. People that don't wear masks are suddenly evil people that don't care if somebody dies. We hear a new story about people that we know that are passing away or that have it. And I mean, it's really forcing us to live in our homes. Human beings by nature are very social, and COVID-19 is making us much less social. And I think it's accelerating a lot of the anxieties we have as a society. And we're starting to really see that, I think, in film. If you look, Disney, for example, they recently acquired the rights to produce an Alien based on the 1979 Alien film. They're going to make a series about it. And that has people like me really excited. For anybody that grew up watching Sigourney Weaver's Ripley torching the Queen Alien or some of these other creatures, it's really exciting for us to know that they're now going to put some money behind this. And if it's Disney involved, you know they're going to back a truck up full of money, and they're going to have some great special effects involved. The premise, from what I understand, is going to take place in the not-too-distant future, unlike the Alien franchise that takes place hundreds of years from now. This one, it sounds like, is going to be in the near future. What exactly that means, I don't know. I don't know if they're Elon Musk spaceships traveling around. I don't know if these are interstellar spaceships. I don't know what that's going to look like. But I think with Disney, let me ask you guys, can Disney really do anything wrong? Have you seen a Disney production that really wasn't very good? I haven't. Wrong. I can't name a single
production.
One.
No. Production, they have money to back it up. They're Pixar. They know what they're doing.
What about you, Jay?
Value-wise, they're fine. What was that horrible one, Jay?
Artemis Fowl.
Artemis Fowl. I don't think I'm familiar with that one.
But that was like, I mean, cinematography-wise, it was great. I mean, visually, it was fine. It was just a horrible story, not executed well. They didn't release it in theaters because they knew it wouldn't have done anything, so they just used a scapegoat of just streaming it.
It was directed by, I can't remember his name in real life now, dang it. He's the professor in the second year in Harry Potter.
Delroy Lockhart.
I don't know his name in real life, though. I'll look it up. Guillermo, look it up for us. But
looking it up.
and even beyond Disney, too, Amazon is going to create – if I was going to recommend one of the most terrifying sci-fi horror movies to the listeners and to you guys, and I can't honestly recommend it because it's such a disturbing movie, you really have to love and embrace the sci-fi horror genre to get through it, because there is a lot of graphic content in it. It's called Event Horizon. And what's unique about this movie is not only does it have one of my favorite actors in Lawrence Fishburne, but it's got Sam Neill. He plays Alan Grant in Jurassic Park. And the premise is that there is a space crew that's being sent to there was a signal out in space by a ship that sent out an SOS asking for help. The ship has been gone for like 40 years. And of course, they are the crew that's going to board this other ship and find out what they need help with, right? And rescue this crew that's been out there in space. And the premise is that ship that sent the SOS actually went through hell, that it's actually a place out there in the ether somewhere out in outer space. Really morbid film, but Amazon's going to turn that into a series. And again, for people like me, that's going to be a terrifying series. How they go about setting it up, I don't know. But the film itself, if you have time and if you really want to give yourself nightmares, that's one to watch.
Give us the title of it again.
It's called Event Horizon. It came out in 1997.
Yeah, in the late 90s.
Have you watched it, Johnny?
Yeah, a long time ago. I mean, I'm not too into it. But I remember it a lot.
For anybody that's played the video game Dead Space, it feels a lot like that video game.
Dead Space.
It's a very claustrophobic environment. Jay, you raise your eyebrows. I'm guessing you've played Dead Space.
Yeah, dude, I've lost sleep because of Dead Space.
Yeah, you would like it then. It plays a lot like that. Claustrophobic, narrow hallways. The acting is fairly compelling. The storyline is good. But I'm telling you, man, you're going to see some scenes in there that you'll wish you could take back. You'll lose a little bit of virtue watching that movie. But what Amazon decides to do and when they decide to roll that out, I'm not sure. But I am happy to see a lot of major production companies embracing the sci-fi horror genre because there really are a lot of gems in there that people overlook.
I'll quiz you on this one. George R.R. Martin, the one who did Game of Thrones, has a really big novel, and the Sci-Fi Channel tried to do it as a space horror novella, Night Flyers, done by the Sci-Fi Channel. Netflix picked it up, but it got canceled after a season. Did you see it, Tyler?
I'm not familiar with that one, John. Really? Can you tell me the premise of that one?
Yeah, it's just on a mission aboard the Night Flyers, the most advanced ship ever. They are embarking an expedition to make first contact with aliens, and then they're terrified that everyone's dead on a ship. I mean, it's pretty much the same thing as just a ghost spaceship going around.
And so that's interesting. So George, it's based on a novel of his, correct?
Yeah, it's called Night Flyers.
Because you're also reading another novel. At least the plot is very similar to another novel called A Ship of Fools, right? And the premise of this sci-fi horror novel is that I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Passengers with Chris Pratt and I forget her name.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence, right? Yeah. The premise is that they're recolonizing a planet and mm-hmm. on board the ship is like 100,000 people. That's the same concept of A Ship of Fools, but of course, you know, things go haywire and they come into contact with alien life forms that are hostile. And so that's interesting. Night Flyers. I'll have to watch that. So Netflix
on
did
Netflix now. I mean, they don't, yeah. It's a one and done, but Netflix has it on there to stream. But the thing is, the Sci-Fi Channel was doing so well on their shows. They had Killjoys. They had they had these other ones too that they're doing really good with their shows. And then they just kind of gave up after the third season on a lot of them.
And see, what's interesting too is you've really got to get people like me. I don't think we don't start to appreciate sci-fi horror when we're older. It happens when we're young, right? And so what you really need to grow that genre is you need films that are in that same vein that can appeal to younger people. I think I created a list, by the way, last night, thinking of this podcast, of some of my favorite sci-fi horror movies. And a lot of these are movies I saw as a kid, right? One of the first movies I can recall, and I'm going to date myself here, but this is back in late 1990, was the movie Tremors, starring Kevin Bacon and Rita McIntyre's in that movie. I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Tremors. You basically have this small little podunk town in Nevada. You've got a couple of handymen out there who's Kevin Bacon. And basically they have a seismologist, somebody who measures earthquakes. She's working for the university out there. And she starts getting seismic activity. And they find out that there's these giant alien life forms living underground that wake up. And the premise is these people trying to survive. Very enjoyable movie, but movies like that weren't super violent that I watched as a kid that really planted the seeds in me to appreciate sci-fi horror. Jurassic Park, I think for most of us that are millennials, that was kind of our Star Wars, right? We weren't alive when the initial three Star Wars movies came out, but Jurassic Park tended to be that for us, right? We have these toys that we grew up with. We can look back nostalgically. We can quote the lines. We know the characters. And it's also interesting because that, again, is one of those movies that toes the line. I mean, you have those scenes where you're in the raptors. You know, she's trying to turn on the power, and you have those raptors that are stalking her and hunting her, and you have Samuel L. Jackson's dismembered arm falling on her. I think as a kid, that really spooked the hell out of me. And now as an adult, I can appreciate really what Steven Spielberg was doing there. And I think for a lot of us sci-fi horror fans – you know, those are some of the movies that really imprinted on us when we were younger. Starship Troopers, that's another classic movie. I don't know if you guys have seen that one. Highly recommend it to any of your listeners.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the Jurassic Park was really good, too. I think there's no – you can get a kid between 20 to 50 right now, and if you see a water shaking or balancing, you'll be like, uh-oh, there's dinosaurs coming. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just that simple little scene.
Oh, yeah.
We'll always remember.
Oh, yeah. I still think of that, Johnny. It's funny you bring that up, but
that's one of the most like just imprinted in my head of just like, and every time now, like when I just have something, I bump a table and it shakes, I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah. There's that ominous feeling of something larger, right? Something that could kill you approaching you. So, and sorry.
Oh, I just really quick wanted to say this last summer with COVID, they shut down theaters, they didn't release movies in theaters anymore. So in Utah, the theaters were still open. So they were showing Jurassic Park in IMAX, and my wife and I went to see it because I missed out on seeing Jurassic Park in the theaters. I'm not quite – my parents wouldn't have taken me when I was younger, basically. And it scared me to death because I can't believe how well the graphics hold up. And the scene you're talking about where she's being hunted by the raptors. So it's a pretty quiet theater. There were probably only 20 people in it, maybe, in the whole IMAX theater. And the raptor's head pops out. And I forgot that it was going to do that because I hadn't seen the movie in a minute. Actually, no, I knew the raptor's head was coming, but I thought it was coming later on. So when that raptor came through like the wires and screeched, I screamed in the theater, oh, like legitimately really loud. I screamed and jumped, and it was kind of embarrassing because I think everyone was kind of like, what the flip? Like, mm-hmm. how did this guy not know this was coming? Like,
yeah, and the thing about that crazy. Too, right, is it straddled the line. Your parents, I could see why they probably didn't want you to see that. But at the same time, you know, when you're kids, we're drawn to that kind of stuff. And I have an 18-month-old daughter, and it's so bizarre because she loves being scared. I mean, she loves it. When I chase after her, when I make noises that are really loud, she really likes it. She laughs at it. She enjoys it. And so maybe there is something genetic to it there, where there are people that, like me, feel compelled by horror movies, by science fiction involved in that horror. You know, I grew up, of course, again, dating myself, watching movies like Congo, another Michael Crichton movie. And there's a scene in that near the end of the movie where these gorillas they literally bludgeon, what's his name, Steve Kerr. This is now like the second time I've talked about this guy. Who plays Pennywise again, the old Pennywise?
Curry.
Tim Kerr.
Tim Kerr. Tim Curry, Tim Curry, and these apes are all disfigured, right? They're all mutated. They're scary looking. They don't look like a friendly little gorilla. And watching them bludgeon him, I mean, that was terrifying as a kid. But now as an adult, I can actually say, you know what? I could see why maybe people wouldn't want their kids there. But kids are going to find a way, you know, to borrow from Ian Malcolm. Kids find a way. They find a way to find this content. And now with the way the world has become so digitized,
dude, it's so much easier now. Oh my god.
So much easier. Yeah, you guys, I don't know about you, Jay.
You can just YouTube it now, man. It's disgusting.
Yeah. And do you guys remember creeping around though, having to like watch these movies without your parents knowing? Maybe I was the only rebel, but I remember vividly doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I remember.
And I remember trying to, you'd watch it and then it was always with like a friend. Like I never had it in my house because we didn't really have it a lot, but like at your friend's house, who had an older sibling who showed him how to unlock the TV, and you're like, yeah, let's watch it.
Or you're watching a scary movie, and you hear the footsteps of one of your parents coming downstairs, and you quickly have to change the channel.
Yep, to SportsCenter. To SportsCenter. It was always.
You haven't lived until you've done that. I mean, well, let me ask you guys: is there a sci-fi horror movie you remember as kids?
I didn't watch a lot of sci-fi horror, but I'll split it because I'm really huge into Bruce Campbell. So I love Army of the Dead. Ash of the, what is it? Oh man.
You mean Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness. Yeah. In Evil Dead. Yeah. I'm confusing the two here. He had the show. So anything he did, I'd watch a lot of, and then I would just watch like underground, like, sci-fi movies. There was, The Last Starfighter,
Airbender.
And it was a guy.
Oh, man.
And it was like the most classic. It was one of the first, I'll date myself even more than you, it was one of the first Blu-rays I bought. And it was just cool because the guy was just made to play a video game. The concept was so easy. He used to play a video game, and he did so well that these aliens got him because they're like, oh, we need you to fly these actual spaceships, and you're really good, and we need you to save us. And that was it. It was a super simple progression of a story, but it was a really good story.
Yeah, no, that's interesting you bring that up because it has little elements that remind me of Ender's Game a little bit, which, if anybody's read the novels, are fantastic. The movie that came out 7 years ago, starring Harrison Ford, it doesn't do justice to the books. Ender's Game, I mean, it is a fantastic book. But Johnny, it's funny you bring that up because the same movies you're referring to, the Bruce Campbell style movies, I also grew up loving those movies. And there's a few others that remind me of that. Big Trouble in Little China.
Dude, I remember that.
You remember that? That's a great movie. Yeah. Some of the other ones like that, The Thing, that came out in 1982. That, in my opinion, is one of the greatest horror movies. In fact, there's not a more relevant horror movie that has sci-fi components for the modern-day listener than the movie The Thing, right? Because throughout this movie, there are crew members in Antarctica at this research facility cut off from the world. And some of them are infected, and the rest of the movie involves paranoia. People wondering who's got this bug, who's doing all this stuff. And think about COVID. I mean, everybody, if somebody coughs in public, people are like, you know, spreading out. Or when we hear that somebody's has COVID, we're like, well, you stay away from me. Maybe it's not a good idea. We're making decisions now based a lot on paranoia and fear. And some of that is deserved, but a lot of it isn't, right? I mean, at some point, the fear of the of COVID is less severe, I guess, than actually catching it.
It does dictate a lot of your life.
So talking about fear and stuff, and you asked which one I kind of attuned to as a kid, I was curious, yeah. Would you say that Predator falls
absolutely
into, okay, that was one that absolutely. We would watch. I don't know. You know, for some reason, my parents, like, some films were okay, and I have no idea why. And Predator was one that we'd watch. Like, it'd be a Sunday afternoon, and my dad would just throw it on. Watching Predator makes no sense to me. Why we, like, no other film would be like it. You know what I mean? Like,
what is Robert California doing, Jay?
I don't know. So that's one where I remember the dude, like, I'm probably 10 or 12. The dude's, like, just dry shaving, you know, covered in sweat, and he starts. Yeah, that's a film that I remember as a little kid, like, being like. And yeah, I have no idea. Like, other stuff was way censored for us, and that one slipped through for some reason. No clue why.
It's funny you bring that up. Again, I created this list, and I will share this with you guys. Predator is on that list. And that was groundbreaking for a number of reasons, right? If I recall, that movie came out in 1987, and you had really some of the heavy hitters in that movie. You had Arnold Schwarzenegger. You had Carl Weathers in that, right? I mean, he's in Mandalorian right now, right? He's really resurrected his career through the Mandalorian. But then you had Macho Man Randy Savage in that movie. You had a lot of who's who. I mean, and I know exactly the scene you're referring to when he's shaving with the blade, because I'm pretty sure that same man later in the film, he gets injured by the Predator's plasma cannon, we'll call it. And at one point, somebody points out that he's bleeding one of the other soldiers, and he says, "I ain't got time to bleed," right? And as a kid, you're like, "Holy cow, look at these guys." And of course, this is the era of steroids, right? So everybody is jacked. I mean, they look like – they just look like an army of probably what Hitler was hoping to make in Germany, just perfectly chiseled, muscular dudes, right, with big guns. I mean, that's a terrific movie. And I'm happy to see Predator making somewhat of a comeback. I don't know if either of you guys, if I was going to recommend a Predator movie other than the first one, I thought the one that came out in 2010 was phenomenal. That had Adrian Brody in it. That had Lawrence Fishburne in it. Topher Grace, he's in that film. He features prominently in that. And that's actually a terrific movie. If either of you guys get a chance, that is one I highly recommend. I mean, it's fun. It's really action-packed, and you get a lot of the gritty feel to it that you got in the initial Predator movie.
Okay, so follow-up question, because I've been getting really into the movie was supposed to come out this year, and this would have been probably a rekindling of my enjoyment of, if it's classified as a sci-fi horror, but A Quiet Place. Would you put that in that?
I would, and here's my classification. You know, and you're right. There are categories of horror films, right? And my classification is for it to be sci-fi horror, when we talk about the STEM, right, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, if any of those feature at all at any point in the film, then you can call it a sci-fi movie. And in A Quiet Place, you do have that, right? You've got this origin story. You've got the mythos of what are these creatures, and you've got them trying to figure out how to kill them, right? You don't know where they're from. They're alien, right? Those tend to be certainly sci-fi. It almost feels like a Cloverfield movie. But yeah, I think A Quiet Place is terrific. What are your thoughts on A Quiet Place? It sounds like that resonated with you.
I just like the idea of a family trying to protect their children and they can't make a noise. I thought the acting in it was unbelievable. To be able to have a film so compelling with almost no audio. Not no audio. Let me rephrase that. With almost no dialogue.
Dialogue. Yeah.
Is really hard to do. Funny story. My brother took his wife to see A Quiet Place, and they're sitting there watching it, and the little boy turns on the rocket, and the monster comes through the wood and just eats the little kid, grabs him, and my sister-in-law screams and jumps and turns to my brother and goes, "This has monsters in it." She had no idea what the movie was, what was happening.
Oh boy,
she didn't know what she was getting into.
That is so funny. Quiet Place was terrific. I think that was really John Krasinski's directorial debut, right?
Correct. Well, they wrote it together, right? It was a passion project. Yeah, it was a passion project.
He didn't write it. He directed it together, but they were approached. So John Krasinski was approached by someone
they wrote it.
Who said, "Hey, I've got a movie idea for you." And John Krasinski said, "Oh, like you'll have to go through my agent, whatever." And he goes, "It's about a family that can't make noise because of aliens." Or he gave like a super brief, like one sentence, and John Krasinski stops and like, "All right, that's a good pitch. Like, tell me more." So even though he said he's not interested, like the dude told him like a super quick premise, and that's what led to the movie being made.
Yeah, and thank goodness it did, right? And it's sad as we talk about COVID, but that was one of the sequels set to launch this year that we're going to have to wait until who knows when, right? Along with a number of other good movies. But yeah, I think A Quiet Place, they draw on a lot of those fears. And I think it resonates with people because, again, here we are trying to survive as families, right? We're not able to interact with people the way we used to. And it's interesting that now more than ever, that movie is probably feeling some popularity from people that are like, "Oh, I feel like I'm trapped in a cage and I can't really make noise, right? I can't really interact with people the way I normally do." And if you think about it, we don't have the same outlets, right? A year ago, if you wanted to escape reality a little bit, you'd go to a restaurant and you'd go eat with your friends, or you'd go see a movie, or you'd go on vacation. You'd go traveling. Guess what? We can't do that stuff. And so where is our outlet, right? And I think that's why we're forced now to live within our own minds and live with our reality in a two-block existence, so to speak. And I think horror movies are doing a good job. And we're certainly going to see some interesting movies, I think, that spawn out of this pandemic that are probably related to that. A lot of people are talking about Quarantine, the film that came out. Mm-hmm. It was initially a Spanish movie, right? That was adapted. A lot of those good movies come from other countries and Americans. We just slap a different name on them. But yeah, John, it sounds like you've seen the movie Quarantine.
No, I just liked how it didn't take them long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and we'll see a lot of that too. We're going to see movies related to an infection or virus or people that, react differently. But yeah, sci-fi and horror, I think it really is something that we're all now starting to, at least people like me, we're starting to see a resurgence of that. And the industry itself is starting to I guess, capture some of that. And that's not always the case, right? Because you're always going to have your Marvel movies and you're always going to have the Mandalorian style movies. And don't get me wrong, I like the original Star Wars. And I think Mandalorian's doing a terrific job of really narrowing the scope of Star Wars. Now you're focusing on this man and his journey and the narrative that involves him, whereas Star Wars initially, I mean, you've got all these different storylines, and J.J. Abrams, he really only complicated that and diluted that, in my opinion. But yeah, with some of the newer movies coming out, I think you're going to see a lot darker of a storyline than we used to see. And I think you'll probably see that in a lot of the Star Wars that's going to come out, because as I understand, they're going to do a new series. Is that right?
They have a few.
They have a couple of them in the works.
Do they? Okay. Mm-hmm. Have they started filming them?
I don't think
so. No, everyone's COVID. Kind of delayed right now still.
Okay.
So kind of on the same note of Star Wars, but like almost darker and more realistic. You brought up Alien earlier, and I really wanted to talk, or I wanted to pick your brain on Alien just a little bit. But sure. But not the old Alien. I do want to talk about that, but in more recent years, they made Alien Covenant and they made Prometheus. And I wanted to know, what did you think? Because there's one character from those movies that I've really attached to and who I really...
You're probably talking about David.
Yes,
right?
David. I wanted to ask you about the android David. Holy cow. Michael Fassbender's okay. David.
Sure. Well, I guess let's first talk about Prometheus itself, right? Anybody that saw the old 1979 film with Sigourney Weaver, they pitched that movie... To I don't know if it was Universal, describing it in one sentence as truckers in space, right? The way John described A Quiet Place as a family that can't make noise. This was their pitch to Universal Studios. What's his name? Why can't I think of his name? Ridley Scott's pitch was truckers in space. Mm-hmm. And they went with it. And this film, they discover a spaceship they discover a spaceship, and they enter that spaceship, And somewhere in there, there's this giant creature that's decomposed, and it's like 40 feet long. Prometheus tells the story of that creature that was on board that ship that is never really explained, right? These 40-foot-long monsters, and they're called engineers, right? But yeah, so that movie, Ridley Scott made it in 2012, and of course you have this new little concept of an enjoyable android, right? And I think it's funny you bring David up, because I think it is a little bit symbolism, right? Because now look at what we have. We have virtual assistants now that help us, right? We have Siri, we have Alexa, we have Google devices. And I think the concept of David is that maybe one day we're going to create an artificial intelligence that is almost as human as we are, and that it will blur the lines between what it means to be human and what it means to be a machine. And of course, Michael Fassbender, he really does a terrific job portraying this droid, right, who isn't human, and yet he has these complex thoughts. I think in the first Prometheus movie that you're describing, at one point, David, he asks, you know, what it's like to dream, and he has a hard time grasping that. And of course, David believes that to be human, it means to create life, right? For a man to impregnate a woman and for offspring to come out of this. And so David becomes obsessed with that part of being human, which is why, you know, we have the what he did. And for anybody that has seen the movie, I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't, but it involves David and he starts meddling in things he shouldn't. And of course, we see an alien life form resulting from his actions that ends up, you know, turning into a pretty evil creature. I mean, that's where we have the mythos of the alien movie, right? But it's funny you bring up David, because they've really tried to expand on that character in Alien Covenant, which in my opinion, and I don't mean to be talking over everybody, I really feel like I'm talking a lot, but in my opinion, Alien Covenant is the weakest of the franchise movies, because you have a lot of characters, they never really take time to develop. Even David, he becomes less likable in Alien Covenant. You start to really dislike him. I mean, there's really nobody in that movie that I even cared about. And when you don't care about the characters, it's hard to really get involved in the plot, because you don't care if they live or die. You just, all you care about at that point is seeing the alien here and there. But yeah, I mean, Prometheus, I thought, was a terrific way to relaunch it. But I don't know if you guys are familiar too much with Ridley Scott. He does have that problem. He has a hard time making a sequel. And he's struggled with this throughout his whole career. And that's why I think he's somewhat of a one movie only. And if a franchise goes to Ridley Scott, that's where you tend to have a problem. And in fact, we were just talking about Disney making a series based on Alien, and Ridley Scott is actually wanting to be involved as a producer. And for people like me that are really into the sci-fi horror genre, that's worrisome, because we know that he really struggles making more than one movie. I mean, he's done some terrific shows. He did The Gladiator. If I'm not mistaken, he also did the Titanic. Blade Runner.
That was a big
did
one.
Did he do Blade Runner? Yeah. I mean,
the original Blade Runner.
The original one with Harrison Ford,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is a terrific movie. I mean, a lot of people, that's their sci-fi entry point was Blade mm-hmm. Runner. Terrific movie, the original. The sequel, follow-up, wasn't bad. It was a bit long. But in terms of Ridley Scott, if he is involved in the Alien series coming up, I'm not going to be very happy, just because, you know, he's a little bit like J.J. Abrams, right? And J.J. Abrams, and I say this, I don't know where you guys, how you feel about him. He did the recent three Star Wars installments. In my opinion, J.J. Abrams is to the cinema industry what Imagine Dragons is to the music industry, right? And what I mean by that is he's basically figured out a way to make a movie mass appealable to everybody. And by doing that, you lose the loyal fans. You lose people that actually care about what the Star Wars plots are. Because what he's really done is he's just made something that everyone can enjoy. You know, 75-year-olds, little kids. And that's actually, in my opinion, a problem, right? Because you're going to sell out the people that care most about it. You're going to sell out the nerds, the geeks. And I think Abrams essentially did that without realizing it, but he's done that a number of times now, where he's made a follow-up movie, and you just it feels like he's really just trying to make it broadly appealable, and he no longer cares about the people that really propped it up, and he doesn't care about the mythos of it. He just wants to make something that he knows will sell movie tickets, and I think that's an issue. And Mandalorian is doing the exact opposite, right? They're really targeting this to a different demographic. a lot of the themes in there and the Mandalorian episodes involve violence and death. And I mean, you're seeing stormtroopers get their heads bludgeoned in by Boba Fett, right? You wouldn't see that in the initial J.J. Abrams version of Star Wars. I mean, it was very vanilla, whereas now we're seeing a grittier, darker Star Wars. And I think that's resonating more with people.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the streaming sites have a lot more liberty to do things. They can risk more, which is good. As long as they can keep that going, they'll be fine. Right. It's yeah, the license to it's the license to only talk to 10 people instead of having 100 people talking to them.
Yeah, that, and you know, Johnny, you're probably right. And J.J. Abrams, he did terrific with Cloverfield, the initial one. He didn't make 310 Cloverfield Lane, the follow-up, which I really enjoyed. That was directed by somebody else, but it was released under the Bad Robot. Have either of you seen that movie, 310 Cloverfield Lane?
I've only seen the original one.
Terrific one.
Gave me a headache. I like the cast. It was a
shaky cam.
Oh, the guy from She's Out of My League. So it was a good cast, but I don't like the camera shaking.
Yeah, the found footage genre, that's a problem. I agree with you. It can be nauseating. If there's one movie I would recommend for you guys to see this week, it would be 10 Cloverfield Lane. For quarantine reasons, I think you guys would really enjoy it. It's a really good movie. It's mostly a horror movie with very little sci-fi, but the sci-fi at the end is terrific. But, you know, I think in terms of the Alien franchise, Jay, going all the way, circling all the way back, I've said a lot to get back to, you know, your initial question. I think they should explore more about David's character, and I hope they do that in this future series that Disney's going to produce in conjunction with FX. I guess we'll see how that pans out.
I think I just attached to – so there's a show called Hannibal in which Hannibal starts messing with stuff he shouldn't mess with. It's about Hannibal Lecter, played by Mads Mikkelsen. And Hannibal starts doing things basically like – and you watch him do it. He starts messing with people. And that's kind of what I attach to David, is like some of the stuff he starts to do to basically like stress you out. You know what I mean? That's what I kind of get attached to, is – he's so confident, and yet he's doing these things that you know he shouldn't be. And for some reason, it's just kind of, I don't know, the way that they can portray that confidence and that, I don't know, that type of character to me is, I just kind of gravitate to it and find it interesting.
It certainly blurs the line. And I think we're going to see more films like that, where we have an artificial intelligence. Another movie on the list that I'm going to text to you guys, and you can see it. And you can even post it to the Deadlight Nerd group, or what are we calling your followers? Just the fan base, the Deadlight
fan
base.
They're the Knights.
You can post it to the Knights. And that movie is Ex Machina. It came out in 2015.
I know.
Oscar Isaac.
Great movie, right? Very spooky. It had the same plot where you're trying to figure out what does it really mean to be human.
Yeah. We watched that over the summer, and it kind of mind-effed me a little bit.
Oscar Isaac was just killing it. Like if you watch a lot of his stuff,
he's so weird in that movie. He's so weird,
but it's so good though. That's I like him weird.
Yeah,
and I think the viewers, for those listening, Ex Machina involves a man that's been brought by an Elon Musk type character, right? And a CEO of a Fortune 10 company brings him out to his house, and he's testing his latest artificial technology. And this person has won a contest, and he's allowed to come and experiment with this artificial intelligence. And it's a female robot, and he knows it's a robot. And he's testing whether or not he can convince somebody who knows it's a robot to disregard that knowledge and start treating this robot like a human being. And, of course, he ends up falling in love with this robot, and she starts to manipulate him, and it takes a really dark twist near the end. And it's a terrific movie. And I think the Latin naming Ex Machina is a perfect title for it. But yeah, highly recommended movie.
Do you know what the Latin means?
Yeah, it means so whenever there's an inexplicable event that would happen in a Latin story, they would call it Deus Ex Machina, which means God from the mechanism, or God from the machine. And that's a way of them basically describing something as an act of God, right? Like an insurance claim. If you get hit by a deer, you can't really claim that was negligent driving, and you can't really claim that another person caused it. That would be an act of God insurance claim that you would file with your insurance company. Ex Machina is a similar. It's a device that existed in ancient Greek and Roman literature that would cause the plot to advance in some way. It was neither something that was caused by a main character or an enemy. It was just advance the plot in some way, whether it be like a lightning strike killing the protagonist, or whether it would be like a meteorite coming out of the sky and hitting somebody. It would be something. In this case, you know, the film itself, she is probably this machine, right? And this is the advancing of the plot, is her manipulating this poor man into falling in love with her and wanting to do what it takes to rescue her from her bondage in this dude's mansion. Yeah, just a very good movie. But yeah, that's on my list as well of sci-fi horror movies I highly recommend.
It's on Hulu. If any of you knights want to check it out, if you're bored or if you're stuck in the holidays, check it out.
I would also say it has the best twists, because it has multiple twists throughout the film. As you learn stuff, anytime you make it, in my opinion, anytime there are like big moves, you don't really see it coming. And it happens multiple times throughout the film. So I enjoy that. I think sometimes twists can be kind of a trope, but it's not at all in this film.
Yeah, especially if you're M. Night Shyamalan, right? Then then a twist is absolutely a trope. I think I agree with you, Jay. Terrific movie. It's one of those movies that really sticks with you. I think even now I shiver a little bit whenever I think about that final scene where the plot really hits that climax. Yeah, very spooky movie.
Oh, yeah.
And even but I think they, we are. Yeah. Sorry, you were saying.
No, I was just going to say, even how they sometimes portray either violence or movements from characters, you can tell, like, it's almost eerie the way certain individuals move at points in the film.
Huh. I'll have to go back and rewatch some of the locomotion of the actors and of the machines themselves. But yeah, they did an absolutely terrific job casting that. And I do think that we are so reliant on technology now that a lot of horror movies are based on what happens when the technology goes south, right? The Cabin in the Woods is a terrific example of that. You know, what happens when the very things, things that we've created to make our lives easier, what happens when those go away? And what happens when we have to cope now with the world that we've created without those things? Again, I hate to keep going back to this pandemic, but I think it's forcing us now to really understand what it actually means to live without constantly having outlets, right? Without being able to do some of the things that we used to do. And we're learning a little bit more of a primitive lifestyle. And I hate it. I think most of us do. But it's certainly teaching us things, I think, that we didn't know even a year ago.
It's a good reset. We're gonna enjoy concerts more. We're gonna enjoy conventions more. We're gonna enjoy company of others more. So it's a good reset. I try to look at the lighter side, because it is, you know, what I'm the master of is light. And Jay can look at the sad part of the pandemic.
So I mentioned a film when I was younger in Predator, and I mentioned one in my old age in A Quiet Place. But I wanted to bring up one other film, I Am Legend. For kind of the sci-fi horror. I don't know if you would classify it. I would, just because, I don't know. It's not quite zombies. It's more like...
Absolutely, right? You've got a STEM. You've got technology and you've got science in there. And then you've got horror. So, yeah.
They basically cured cancer, right? Or that's what they thought. And then it goes wrong medically. But I watched that film when I was 17, I think. When did it come out? It came out in 2008.
Or 2007. You're right, John. Yeah.
No, so I would have been 14 when I saw it. I'm an idiot. I was 14 when I saw it. And I remember I saw it in California, and I was visiting some relatives, and they had two houses in a cul-de-sac. And after I watched the movie, if it was nighttime and I had to go from one house to the other, I would get out. I'd look out into the darkness because there were like no street lamps. There was one street lamp between the two homes, and I would sprint across the cul-de-sac. Because if I was with someone, I didn't care. But if it was just me, like, that movie messed with my brain a little bit. And I could just, like, feel people chasing me in the dark. So I couldn't do it. I had to run from house to house. And I didn't really tell anyone that. But, yeah, I would sprint from one house to the next.
It's interesting, right? Because I Am Legend, again, it probably is in vogue again with what we're seeing right now, right? Because here you have the plot of the last human being on Earth, and he's with his loyal companion, his German Shepherd, and They're living in a dystopian landscape of New York City. There's no human beings. He has relationships with mannequins that he talks to. He's obviously in tremendous physical shape, right? I mean, Will Smith, he's basically Tom Hanks in Castaway, but in the New York City, right? He's losing his mind a little bit. And yeah, he's trying to find a cure for something that's turning people into zombies, or I guess bloodthirsty. They can't be in the sunlight, right? So that features prominently throughout the show, is that they only come out at night. And for some reason, John, I feel like I saw this movie with you maybe.
You probably did.
Comments. Yeah, because I remember Brent Schwendeman was there and some of our other friends.
And to nerd out even more, I think a big reason why we went is because we weren't able to watch trailers when they came out, but they had the new Batman trailer for The Dark Knight as part of it. So that was like a thing to go to the movie to watch a trailer of another movie. And I just remember vividly like getting stoked to watch that. And then we got to watch a really cool trailer.
Yeah, and you know, I that's funny you bring that up, because the trailer for The Dark Knight was out of this world. I'd never seen a movie trailer like what they did.
It was,
if I recall,
wasn't it long too? That was like 8 minutes.
It was the entire bank heist scene.
Yeah,
and that was the trailer, and it just cut away, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking that was groundbreaking, because normally movie trailers are 2 minutes and 10 seconds cut down of all the best scenes in the movie. But that was just they knew what they had with The Dark Knight. And that was a phenomenal trailer. But yeah, you know, going back to I Am Legend, right, which is also based on a novel. And there's a number of bad movies, I think, that have tried to come off like I Am Legend. But I think it was a terrific movie. And for what it was, and you could even argue that A Quiet Place is a little bit like I Am Legend, right? Here he is, this guy just trying to survive. He's trying to figure out how to defeat this thing. And same with A Quiet Place, right? You've got this family trying to survive, trying to figure out how to defeat this thing. And, you know, throughout the film, they come into contact with other people that don't last usually very long. I think it's a great sci-fi movie. It's not my favorite. Recently, for any sci-fi nerds out there like me, sci-fi horror nerds, let me put that in there, they made an alternate ending, or that was released, where Will Smith doesn't die in the end, right? He doesn't blow himself up. He actually gets out, and I can't remember how many scenes they've added to it, but it's like 3 extra minutes of the movie where he doesn't. It's a whole alternate ending, and that came out, I think, a couple of years ago. I guess they're just sitting on the footage waiting to show us. But yeah, so that's out there now. I think I like the ending where he kills himself, because it's a little more unconventional, right? And I think it's good to see movies that are less conventional than they used to be. I don't like knowing the patterns of everything. I like being surprised. And we don't get surprised very often, because Hollywood, John said it best, they're trying to play it safe. And you don't win a lot of viewers when your favorite protagonist is killed at the end.
Or not only that, too, like Dumb and Dumber, the original scene was Lloyd. When they see those Swedish girls, they get in the bus, and it's like a happy ending. And then... You know, Jim Carrey was like, no, my character is an idiot. He's not going to do that. And he put, you know, when they put their foot down and they realize, hey, it might bug people, but they'll remember it. And that was one of those classic scenes where people remember not the happy ending, or not like an ending that satisfies them, but satisfies the arc of the character.
I love it, John. We ought to do a cast one day. You guys ought to have me back on, and we'll talk about unconventional sci-fi endings. Movie endings, because, or just movie endings in general, because you're right. There are some, and the more memorable ones are the ones that really are the unconventional ones. Again, not to go back to Cabin in the Woods, but that movie was groundbreaking for what it was, right? Joss Whedon directed it. You had a Chris Hemsworth, and the movie was filmed in 2009, even though it didn't hit theaters until 2012. Nobody wanted to put it out, because at that time, nobody knew who Chris Hemsworth was, right? He was briefly in Star Trek, where he died in the first 10 minutes. He was Chris Pine's, you know, Captain Kirk's dad, who died early in the movie. But then, of course, in 2010, he was Thor, and he reprised that role in 2012 with the Avengers. And that's really what put him on the mark. And once there was a fan base for Chris Hemsworth, that's where A Cabin in the Woods, they're like, all right, well, let's get this film out there and see how it does. And it was a terrific movie. And the ending on that, the whole premise is that, you know, there's puppet masters and they're manipulating these kids. And every horror movie you see is really just a trope or yeah, it's following these stupid patterns. What's that, John?
It was a love letter to the fans. I thought after watching it, I was like, that was really well thought out. Like it was unexpected. I remember watching it, I was thinking like, it was Cabin in the Woods. They're just gonna typical, high school college kids go to the woods and they get attacked. And it was, but at the same time, they gave a love letter to be like, hey, look at all this.
Yeah.
And the ending on that too was just like, oh, nothing really got resolved, but it was perfect.
Well, the allegory at the end, right, is that they have to sacrifice 5 or 4 people, and that keeps these gods satisfied, and they won't leave their tomb underground and kill the rest of humanity. And of course, they fail to do that, and the gods break out at the end. And I think that symbolism to we are those gods, right? We demand movies be made in a certain way, following certain patterns. We hate to see our favorite people dead. And if it is a female that's alive at the end, we can accept that. But we can't accept it if it's the nerd or if it's somebody that we don't care about. If it's the promiscuous woman, if she's the last survivor, people wouldn't have it, right? If the innocent woman dies and she survives, we're not having it. And, and the gods are the same way. And that movie captured it perfectly. And you can actually, I think, enjoy the patterns as you watch that show.
Just stepping off on unconventional endings, I think taking a risk is I think it's probably the most important thing to do. I think a good example is having Vader be Luke's father was kind of like, especially if you think about it in terms of, the 70s, 80s, like that was groundbreaking because that's not playing it safe at all. That was a total mind F for a lot of people. And then having half the Avengers die for me in Infinity War was like, whoa, I didn't think that Disney would be willing to end a movie on such a crazy moment where Thanos is victorious and he just looks out and smiles. I remember I left the theater and was like, that's awesome that they actually did it. And then left you hanging for a year and a half or whatever. Well, a year. It was a year. And then Endgame is much more a safe movie. But there's a reason why I enjoy Infinity War way more. It's because the risk-taking was way more intense. They weren't playing it safe at all for that type of film, where you kind of needed to play it safe. They really pushed the envelope on superhero films.
Well, and you're drawing an interesting conclusion, and I agree with you. And I think that maybe they followed the pattern set out in Star Wars, right? Because for most of the fans, let me ask you guys, and let me see if my theory holds up. I'm not going to say what it is until I hear your responses. What is your favorite Star Wars movie, including all 9 of these things? Excluding like the Han Solo movie and
or Rogue One.
And Rogue One, yeah.
Johnny?
I mean, it's always Empire. I mean, I usually do go for New Hope because it's my original one, but Empire has The Strike Back as one of the best sequels in general, too.
So I actually like Return of the Jedi the best, but I recognize that Empire is a better movie. I just like Return of the Jedi more.
And so you guys hit on exactly what I thought you would say. And that was the unconventional thing, right? And if we're talking about Marvel, it somewhat follows that, right? You have the pushback, right? You have here in Marvel, you have now some of your favorite characters vanishing into the ether, right? Because of Thanos, and Star Wars is the same way. You have now Luke is marooned on some rock being instructed by Yoda, and then you have Han Solo that is in carbonate, right? He's now frozen. For all intents and purposes, his plot line has ended. Because nobody knows what Return of the Jedi holds. And you have a lot of other plots where the good guys are taking a hit. But that builds up, I think, right? Then the cathartic experience happens in the next film. And if you can really make the characters likable when there are bad things like that, unconventional things happening to the good guys, I think the viewer really can resonate with that. And it really becomes a more compelling movie. Some of my favorite movies have those unconventional endings. Another one that I recommend that came out this year, it's a terrific movie. I wouldn't really call it a horror movie. It's more of an action sci-fi movie. It's called Love and Monsters. It came out this year. Fantastic, fun little movie. Jay, you're nodding your head. Have you seen this movie?
Yeah, Dylan O'Brien.
Dylan O'Brien, yep. And it's got some terrific acting, very compelling plot line. The ending I thought was very unconventional. I don't want to spoil this one. This one's still new. I highly recommend it. It's one of the movies I had for the enjoyable movies I've seen this year of 2020. It's called Love and Monsters. For those of you who haven't seen it, highly recommend it. It involves a kid in the future. Again, a dystopian wasteland. Anything that's cold-blooded, any animals that are cold-blooded become mutated, and they grow disproportionately large. We're talking huge insects, huge reptiles, huge amphibians. and they've taken over the landscape. Human beings have been forced to live in bunkers. This kid, he's been living in a bunker, and he's lovesick. He remembers this girl that he knew before the events occurred, and the movie involves him trying to find her. And they talk on a ham radio, and he sets out on an adventure to find her. And of course, when he does, things don't really work out the way that most people are accustomed to them working out. But I don't want to spoil it. It's very interesting, very good movie, very compelling. John, if you haven't seen it, that's one I also recommend, Love and Monsters.
It's on my watch list.
Johnny loves Styles.
Another one I had for 2020, sci-fi horror, is called Underwater. This is a fantastic movie. And I've told a lot of my friends to give it a shot. And the reason they're skeptics is because it stars what's her name?
Kristen Stewart.
That's right, Kristen Stewart. And for most people, she's a fairly annoying, tedious actress. It's hard to take her serious because she doesn't show a lot of emotion. And anybody that's seen the Twilight movies, I mean, that's basically how you should never act. And it's amazing that they made films out of those. But so she plays a scientist that's at the bottom of the ocean on a rig, and they're there doing things, and all hell breaks loose. It's a terrific movie, terrific budget. And for anybody that's into H.P. Lovecraft, there's a nod to there's a nod to H.P. Lovecraft in that movie. But yeah, I thought it was great, very compelling, and it's another one I recommend for anybody that's into the sci-fi horror genre.
Have you read H.P. Lovecraft's book, The Rats in the Walls?
No, I haven't.
That's one I think. So you can just look it up on YouTube. It's an hour long. They have an audio version that's incredible. It's just horror, but it's unreal. It's so good. I'm a big H.P. Lovecraft fan. Well, I shouldn't say big, but I really like H.P. Lovecraft, and
I appreciate it.
He was like a madman with some of his storytelling, like especially for his age, like Cthulhu and all the other stuff he came up with. Dude's a psycho.
So yeah, Jay, then you need to watch Underwater, because you'll definitely understand the H.P. Lovecraft reference. You'll know it when you see it. I'll just put it that way.
Okay.
But it's a terrific movie, and for anybody, I think a good sci-fi horror movie plays on fears and phobias. And this movie, it's very claustrophobic. It's a very campy movie, despite it taking place, you know, at the bottom of the Mariana Trench or wherever they are. But it's very claustrophobic. The walls close in a lot. You know, it's a terrific movie in that sense. It reminds me of another horror movie called The Descent, which is a bunch of people trying to survive a cave system when they get lost in a cave system. If you're claustrophobic, it's going to make your skin crawl. But boy, is it a great movie. And the acting is good. She's not as tedious as she is in Twilight. In fact, she probably does a pretty good job, Kristen Stewart. Again, it's one I recommend.
What would you say that the ending of A Quiet Place is unconventional, just out of curiosity, going with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we could all agree that none of us thought the father, played by John Krasinski, was going to die the way he did. I think most of us, myself included, believed that this family, they would suffer a lot, but they would pull through in the end. I was not anticipating him going out the way he did. And then also the way they wrapped it up, right, with discovering the weakness to these things. I think that was certainly unconventional in that sense. And I think most people like me were now stuck with wondering what the sequel could hold without John Krasinski's character. And I think it's a very unconventional ending in that sense.
Do you think it makes it a better film?
I do. I think it's more compelling. And again, you know, going back to Cabin in the Woods, I'm one of those gods buried in the ground that demands certain things have to happen, right? We need to see some death. We need to see some kind of violence in these movies. And John Krasinski, I think we only really see like two or three. And he's the third one, right? We see what happens to the son at the beginning. We see what happens to the old man who screams, the Willie Nelson looking guy. And then we see what happens to John Krasinski. And for sci-fi horror movie aficionados like me, we need to see that. And it's stupid and it's sad, but I think it was a needed ending that had to happen, in my opinion.
I think Josh Whedon put it best, because whenever he kills somebody off, and that's what he did for Marvel and what he did for Firefly, is like, you know, you need that emotion that these guys are invincible, like they can die, that it's a real story. So I've always liked that trope of like, yeah, no matter what, people can die. It's a real story. It's truth.
I like that, John. In fact, I'm happy you brought that up. I agree. I think we need that. I think that's one of the issues I have with Marvel, is that people don't die there. The good guys just aren't defeated. And some of my favorite, I guess, comic movies growing up, you would have somebody die, and it's sad and it's tragic. I think even if we look at the X-Men cartoons, the early season, Wolverine's best friend, Morph, he dies, right? And he's never quite the same after that. Wolverine's character isn't. And as a kid, that really stuck out. I think for us to really care about the characters, you're right, John, they need to be invincible. They need to be people that can die, that bleed. And when that does happen, death is a part of life. And I think in American culture, it's very taboo, right? Mm-hmm. But it's something we all are going to go through. And I think it's important that we have characters that do die. And I think that sets a movie apart from ones where it's always the same thing, where the good guys always win and the bad guys always die. Some of my favorite movies do have the good guys dying. And I think that's important. And again, those are the movies that resonate most with us.
I'm going to do a Parks and Rec reference here. One of mine that I've always kicked in. Do you remember Deep Blue Sea?
Yep.
With that. And the good thing about that is, like, you know, the heroine dies, like the guy who you think, they're going to end up together.
I forgot.
He dies. And then LL Cool J and Thomas Jane, who was the original Punisher, they end up together.
It.
Like, it's nothing. And it's just like, and he was just like, black man always dies. And he even, Samuel Jackson references that because he makes fun of the Jurassic Park one where he dies. So that was another inside callback to Jurassic Park.
Oh,
I just really like that movie because it's just the two of them at the end, and you think he's going to end up with the doctor, that the good looking actress lady, and they're going to end up happy. They're the ones that survive. I'm like, nope, it's like the hero guy survives, and then LL Cool J, the cook, pretty much, and it's just them at the end killing this big shark. So it was just one of those that
I'm so happy
you're happy about it.
I'm so happy you brought this movie up because I had forgotten. And for the listeners, Deep Blue Sea, it takes place on a rig out in the ocean, and they have discovered, scientists have cured Alzheimer's by injecting a protein, if I recall correctly, that can reverse the effects of Alzheimer's. And the way they did this was by testing it on sharks. They would inject this protein into their brains, but as a side effect, their brains actually grew bigger, and these sharks became intelligent, and they grew larger. And they did that with these Mako sharks. And of course, like Jurassic Park, the sharks get free and all hell breaks loose. And you're right, John. There's very unconventional endings. Samuel L. Jackson, he's in that movie. And
yeah, he dies. Like, it's kind of the same way he dies in Jurassic Park. And then he just always referenced it. I think even the line was almost the same, too, him going out. It was a big callback to that movie.
Yeah.
I thought was funny. But
yeah.
Jurassic Park.
I think Deep Blue Sea was maybe even more shocking, right? Because if I recall correctly, the sharks are loose, people are panicked, the group is fragmenting, and that's where he gives a speech to rally people together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in the middle of this speech, right when he's at that crescendo, his life is quickly snuffed out.
Yeah, and the shark just chews him out.
Yeah, the viewer like me, that shocked us. And I think that at that point, the conventions we've been talking about, movie conventions, that goes out the door. And from that point on, the viewer no longer has any clue what to expect. If they can write out a major character, no one knows what the hell is coming next, right? At that point, we're all just sitting there grasping, you know, holding on to the armrests on our seat, saying, well, what the heck? They've now thrown a monkey wrench into what I thought this movie was going to be. And that's really a good thing. When some of the protagonists, some of the main actors, go away real quick, right? Violently, in a lot of cases, that really sets the stage for a non-conventional movie, and I think we need more of that.
Yeah, these A-list actors are like, you know, it's like in between a cameo and in between a feature. They're pretty much featured actors in these that they go and shoot for like 3 weeks, make some money, and they're happy about it now. I feel like they get more and more lately.
Oh yeah, I mean. You probably do see that, right? They stick their name on the movie. It draws a few extra crowds in there.
Yeah, they probably have like a producership to it just to make money.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's so funny.
Have you enjoyed the new Jurassic movies, the Jurassic World and Jurassic World 2?
Oh, that's a hard question because I'm such a diehard with the originals. I'm Michael Crichton is my favorite author, right? And he's the one that did Jurassic Park, Congo, Timeline, The Andromeda Strain. He's done a lot of he did The Sphere, for anybody that's familiar with that movie or the book. And so you know, I thought they were fun movies. Did I think they were enjoyable? Yes. Did I think that they were good movies that were compelling? No. I didn't think they were that compelling. I didn't think that they made you deep. You know, they made you question your reality and question life. The original Jurassic Park did, right? Some of those questions and conversations they had, I think, resonate with people today, right? Specifically, Ian Malcolm, his character, he brings up philosophical questions that people are grappling with today, right? Things like, we don't stop to think whether or not we only ask ourselves whether or not we could. We don't ever ask whether or not we actually should. I think that's something that really resonates with people today. But yeah, the new Jurassic Worlds, they're fun, but they don't really, you know, on that sense, they don't really connect with people on a deeper sense. I think they're more of an entertainment, really, a movie that's made for entertainment purposes. And there's a lot of movies like that nowadays. And I mean, they're fun, right? They're fun. You see dinosaurs and all that, but I don't think it's a movie that I talk about or think about. There's not really anything in the plot that makes me think about it and question my own reality. And I think movies that are able to do that, you brought up Ex Machina and how that really resonated with you. That's one of those movies, right, that sticks with you. And the best movies do that. They really make us question what it means to be human or makes us question our own reality.
I'm just trying to think of other movies that do that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few.
They all do that.
If you guys have seen District 9, right, that's another one like that where
that was like, pop, that's there. Every in the fire.
Every inch of Halo to be made without Halo being made. That's all those movies are to me.
It's funny you bring that up because that's what it was, John. The initial production company signed on to do a Halo movie, and it was going to be secret. Peter Jackson was going to direct. In fact, if you look at a lot of the weapons, the sniper at the end, the helicopter.
That's Master Chief sniper.
Yeah, that's the sniper. The warthogs have been painted white, and they have like a military insignia on those. Those are actually warthogs from Halo, right? So a lot of the things they had already made, and of course, Neil Blomkamp, he signed on. I think they pulled him in last minute, and he helped guide it. And he it was really his directorial debut, and he did a couple movies later, and he's been quiet lately.
But that's
one of those in Chappie. He does movies that really make you question what it means. Elysium's all about healthcare, right? And then District 9's all about racism. And if we look at it, the human beings become the villains in that film. And these aliens, right, that are vile, they eat cat food. You know, they walk on their they're like bipedal, but they're really slimy looking. They have like tentacles coming out of their mouth. You really feel for them, right? And there's scenes in the movie where your heart is breaking because of aliens that are really nasty looking, and all you want are the bad things to happen to the human beings. And so that's one of those movies that really turns on its head what it means to be human and what it means to be, you know, somebody that isn't racist and rooted with some kind of hatred towards another human being.
But you get that on Mutants too. I mean, any X-Men, a lot of their deep cut X-Men is how, you know, you don't trust other people. So that's a good trope to get on everyone is, you know, you're not different. Everyone fears other people.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Have you seen, so is there any, there's not that many real TV shows. I mean, The Expanse is like the only space novella that's really out there that hasn't been canceled. Is there any TV shows that you're watching in that genre or any that you recommend other than Mystery Science Theater, the original cut, the new stuff? New stuff, man, is horrible.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring that up because one thing I would like to see more of is obviously cinema movies being made into series, you know, backed by Netflix or Amazon or Hulu, because there's just not very many of them.
No, it's wide open.
Yeah, I think, again, this is straying away from sci-fi horror and just pure horror genre, but I really appreciated the Haunting of Hill House. If you guys have seen that one, that's on Netflix. That's a terrific show. But again, it's purely horror. That one doesn't have very much sci-fi involved in that. There hasn't been very many. The Expanse, I started that, John, and a few episodes in. Because that also has Thomas Jane in it, and there's a few other good actors. I think Stephen Strait is in that one, and I really liked him in some of his older movies. I think I started watching it, and I had a difficult time really following through with the plot. But to answer your question, yeah, there just aren't very many, at least that come to mind right now, that I can think of that I really genuinely enjoy and that I could binge watch that are sci-fi horror, right? That doesn't mean there's not great sci-fi ones, because mm-hmm. I love The Mandalorian and I love some of these other sci-fi ones that are out there. But yeah, there just haven't been very many compelling sci-fi horror ones. It's a very steep challenge, I think, for somebody to make a series that's scary every episode. It's just very difficult to do.
What about Stranger Things?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great one. You know what? You're right. Stranger Things was terrific. And the Duffer Brothers, they really brought people back to the 80s, right, with the Goonies. I mean, it felt very much like the Goonies. And if any of you guys have seen the movie The Blob, it came out in 1988, watch that movie. Stranger Things borrows heavily from The Blob. It's almost ridiculous. There's a scene where they're fighting the Blob that's just straight out of Stranger Things season 3, when they're in the hospital fighting that creature, right? You know, the Megamind that's formed one giant creature. Yeah, I really like Stranger Things. They did a great job. The character development is terrific. You care about the people, and again, non-conventional ending, right? Hopper dies. For those who haven't seen it, I guess I'm sure most people have seen it. But yeah, Hopper goes away, and we're gonna see him back in season 4. But I mean, that's really what makes it enjoyable. The family moves away. There's a lot of people there that their characters don't last, and even when you want them to do, even when you want them to last, I think that's a terrific show.
I don't think they should have made any additional seasons. Personally, I think it should have ended with the first season and just not made any more. And part of that is just
geared to. Sorry, you were saying.
Oh, I was just gonna say. I think maybe that was what the original creators may have wanted. Like, I mean, they left out questions for more, but it kind of feels like, you know, it made so much money and had so much attention that they felt like they needed to make more seasons, which I always kind of hate. I'm like, nah, just let it be. You know, there's shows like Avatar: The Last Airbender or Gravity Falls where they say, we're going to make this many episodes, we're going to tell our story, and it's going to be done. I have a harder time with Stranger Things. The second season was okay, and I haven't even watched the third season yet because I kind of stopped caring, because it just feels like rehashing the same stuff.
And that's understandable. You're right. Second season was a little bit of a slog, and it takes on a little bit too much of a friendly tone, right? You have this little creature that they've befriended, and it really starts to lose its way. I'll tell you. Give season 3 a chance. I think you'd like it. It's a lot darker than season 2, and the character development is a lot better. There's a lot of insidious stuff going on in season 3 that they don't really experiment with in the other two seasons. People are dying, actually, and in some cases, horrible deaths. I think you'd really like it. I did. I thought season 3 was infinitely better than season 2. Yes, John, did you say something?
I was going to say, the only one – have you seen Black Mirror on Netflix?
I was going to bring that up, Johnny.
Because the thing they do that's really smart, and I'm not a huge fan of American Horror Story, but what they do too is, like, every season is different. Like, it's not the same story. It's like the same, like, oh, it's an eerie, weird concept, but it's not the same story. So I wonder if that works for you, Jay, or that, like, doesn't, like, wants a one and done or a set series. Is that more like, hey, yeah, it's boom, boom, and it's done. Kind of like the Twilight Zone was back in the day, where it was like, it's one creepy story, okay, move on.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that's how Black Mirror was. I've seen it. It's popped up in my queue a lot. And I thought it was a linear series that follows the same characters again and again. Now that I know that it's not, I think I'll give it a chance.
Yeah, because, like, Miley Cyrus is in, like, season 4 or 5 or something, and it's all different. Yeah.
You know what? I'll give it a chance then, because I do like that. I think we, as a society, I think we probably are a little more ADHD than we used to be. And so if we're having to stick with the plot for too many episodes or too many seasons, we're going to burn out. But if a new episode has new characters or a new season has a whole different cast, I think that's probably going to bring people back more than having the same characters rehash out the same issues again and again and again.
Yeah. It just makes it, interesting. I don't know. Cause I personally, like, I don't care. Like, give me the same kind of concept. I'll watch it a little bit if it's a good one. But I get the monotony of it, and you just want to be like, hey, cool, I got it, move on.
Yeah.
Especially always, like, different people. Like Horror Story does, like, oh, Lady Gaga is going to be in this one season. So they, like, build around that, and that was cool, you know? So that's just me.
Yeah, no, I could see why you're landing there. Yeah, I guess we'll have to see. You know, we'll have to see how it all pans out. Black Mirror. We'll, I'm gonna give that one a go. You. Yeah, I'm gonna give that one a go.
Just something to do. Well, Tyler, we can't thank you enough, and we're just wanting to give you a hard time. We know you. We're just teasing you about the Marvel and Star Wars things. We're glad that you interact, because a lot of people, they get confused of like, wait, who's in charge of this? Who does this? Or they just follow us because, you know, they've grew up with us, like they're just our friends, and they don't really listen to the podcast. We like to have them on. And Jade, we have a master for him. Do we want to call him Master Sci-Fi Horror?
Sure.
All right. Tyler, wait. When you come on the podcast, so our listeners are the knights, but when you're nice enough to give us some time and educate us, we give you the master of something, and you only get it once. Like, we have the master of space, and that was taken. We have the master of strength, and that was taken. So you're the master of sci-fi horror. We'll always go back to you.
I'll take it. It's kind of long. I appreciate you guys having me on here. Next time you want to discuss any of these new sci-fi horror movies coming down the pipe, I'd be glad to come back.
We're going to build a page to interact more, so we can have more of an interaction. If you find something and you hop on, post about it, and we'll chat it up.
We did just start a Reddit, so, you know, be watching for our Reddit posts, I guess. I don't know if you have a Reddit or not. We have no clue what
Reddit is.
Yeah, seriously. Someone requested that we make one. So
thanks for your time. All right, Knights. Catch you on the flippity floppity flip.